Good afternoon and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine with Carla D. Nixon. Say hello.
I'm here.
And Terry D. Kester, say hello.
I did say hello, but that darn Garland was interrupting again. Terry D. Kester here. I'm ready, Garland. Watch out.
And I'm here with my alter ego, Doom, and Terry with his, which would be Gloom.
Yeah, gloom and doom. To me, that's a very, very small topic because no one has ever said about anything, hardly ever. Thank you for that, Terry, for sharing that with us.
I mean, last week, when you weren't with us for a short period there, which we really, really missed you. We wept.
Thank you. You should have.
Yeah, but Garland and I decided that Garland and I are the optimists of the group. Because we face reality and we enjoy reality, and therefore we just want to establish that from the beginning.
Yeah.
We're the optimist.
The optimist that were weeping, apparently, at my loss. Okay, all right. I get it.
No matter how horrifying and brief our future may be as a species, Terry and I keep a smile on our faces.
We do.
And a stiff upper lip.
And that, too. Let's not get into stiff upper lips.
You know, this reminds me of a Bob Marley song, not to get too far off topic here, but one of my favorite Bob Marley songs before, of course, his tragic death, which seems appropriate for Bob Marley, was the song that said, in a very bright, shiny tune that I don't dare sing, but maybe I'll find it in the commercial break or something, check out the real situation, nation fight against nation, where did it all begin, where will it end, will it seem like total destruction, the only solution? Doo-doo, and there ain't no use, no one can stop them now. Ain't no use. Well, I wasn't going to, but it's just a happy song.
It is.
And frankly, I must admit, it's the happiest song about complete world destruction I've ever heard.
Hey, I'm directing a play of J.B. about Job.
I do know that play.
Contemporary Job.
Yes.
It's got a lot of humor in it. I mean, as Satan and God play with the world, it's a lot of fun.
Right. It is a lot of fun. Total destruction can be fun. Let that be the lesson. Okay, maybe not. Speaking of total destruction, we have three topics, all in some way relating to total destruction. I want to talk about the thing that everybody's talking about, which is, of course, the government spying on all of us, totally destroying our privacy. And then, Garland, you wanted to talk about climate change, the world slowly, literally destroying the planet. And then, Terry, you wanted to talk about the destruction of humanity, namely with regard to healthcare. So we're on a destruction theme today.
Not exactly. The right-wing revolution is what I want to talk about.
Okay.
And Medicare and medical care, Obamacare, hope good things are happening.
Whoa.
Hey,
who let the optimist in?
Who is this guy, Mark? Who is this guy?
I don't know, but I think he's clearly kidnapped Terry D. Kester because we don't expect good news from you.
It's a dosage thing.
And you're praising the Obama administration? Terry, I really think you need to get your twin... I think it's his twin brother, and he's locked up Terry, let him free. Let him free. All right, strange and unusual show. Welcome, of course, to the Raucous Caucus, everyone. And if you want to join in our raucous discussion, it's 202-889-9797 right here on We Act Radio. I want to start this out by talking about, what everybody's talking about, which is, oh, my God, the government's spying on us.
Are they?
Well, here's the thing I find so surprising, that people find it so surprising.
Amen.
That's what I find so surprising. I reported back in 2005 and 2006 on the Inside Scoop. I know it's hard to believe I've been in radio almost 10 years, but I have. And I reported that the Bush administration had been spying on hundreds of millions of Americans because, heck, I didn't make that scoop. The New York Times did. The Washington Post did. And it was clear that every single American who used Verizon or AT&T or Sprint or, frankly, every telephone company then in existence except Quest, which, interestingly, is one of the few that is no longer in existence, I don't think.
Well, it was bought by one of the guys.
Yeah, I don't think Quest is still around. Quest is the only one who refused. And, indeed, that's why we know about it, because Quest said, government, you need a warrant. And the government laughed and said, ha, ha, where's your authority for that? And Quest said, the Constitution. And the government laughed and said, no, we all take oaths to uphold the Constitution, but we don't mean it. We don't mean it. It's all. So I'd like to start with the Constitution, start with the Fourth Amendment.
Why bother? It's gone, isn't it?
Well, it is, but it's always important to mourn the past.
Oh, okay.
It's always important to remember what once was and just so that we know. So the Fourth Amendment says in full, I'm going to read it in full, that long amendment. It's really not long at all. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. I got to say, gentlemen, that's a radical amendment.
Truly,
it actually protects privacy. It says that you can't go after our effects, which luckily is broad enough to include even things like email, because, you know, they didn't have email too much back in the 1700s. But houses, papers, persons, and effects, your effects, that's your email. That's everything.
They were spying on the smoke signals coming from the Native Americans.
Right, everything. Well, you can't have unreasonable searches and seizures unless you got a warrant issued upon probable cause, particularly described. Okay, so... to be very, very clear, no one here is complaining about warrants. You have an idea that some terrorist connected to Al-Qaeda is going to bomb America. You go to a judge, you show probable cause, you get a warrant, and no one's complaining about that. Not even those on the far left. What we're complaining about is warrantless searches, warrantless wiretapping. To me, it's absolutely no surprise that President Obama is doing this, because all he did was renew a program that began under George W. Bush. As I said, I reported this 8 years ago to, I guess, ho-hums in the media. The Republicans didn't seem to care about it. They said it was necessary to spy on everyone to protect us against terrorism. And at the time, it was just those people like the ACLU, you know, leftists like Garland here, who used to be a card-carrying member, right? Card-carrying member! Actually, I think on the board or something. Actually, you were worse than a member.
I was the vice president of the board of governors for the ACLU Foundation of Maryland.
Yeah, so you're worse than a card-carrying member. You're one of the leaders of this communist organization.
I was probably being spied on myself in all likelihood.
Yeah, almost certainly. Almost certainly.
But you didn't solve all of our problems back then, Garland. I mean, come on. You know, you were. We were hoping. We were waiting. And you were just sitting around in Maryland, you know, talking to fellow ACLU members? I mean, what happened?
Yeah, my point was that 8 years ago, we complained about this to a big ho-hum. And now that Obama's doing the exact same thing George Bush is doing, and I'm not approving because I didn't approve then, and we could talk about how narrow it is, and, you know, and maybe it is narrow enough, but in my view, it has to at least be public, at least what the parameters are. But first of all, before we get to the specifics of the program, why is something that didn't break news other than on radio stations, you know, radio shows like mine and other progressive news, which as we know is, you know, a full 2% of talk radio. Other than that, it seemed that it no one even knew that virtually all of us were spied on. I've talked about it all the time, and nobody knew, nobody cared. Now that Obama's done the exact same thing, actually in a slightly more limited way than Bush did it, now it's big news. Who wants to start this?
Two reasons. One is, of course, because the right wing wants to do anything it can to destroy Obama. We know that.
That's true. That's true.
That's one of the main reasons.
Which is why, actually, I'm okay with people on the left complaining about this. I'm not okay with people on the right complaining about this, because they didn't complain about it 8 years ago.
And, you know, and you weren't the only one complaining. You know, on WPFW, I covered the issue extensively.
Okay.
And I'm sure Garland did, too, in his work. But the other issue is, you know, people weren't aware back then of how much control they have lost in every single area regarding their privacy. And, you know, it begins with Google, and it begins with, you know, all of the web searching and everything else, knowing full well that, you know, if you sneeze, Google knows it, and they're about to sell you give advertisements about Kleenex for you.
That's true.
They've sold that to 60 billion people and Kleenex manufacturers. You know, so it has become part of our world and our society, and there really isn't a whole lot we can do about it, because it is just simply what is at this point. And to some degree, and you guys may not like this, and I don't like it, but to some degree, we've got to accept it. Because how do you expect the government to do the things we expect them to do? We demand that they protect us. We demand that they prevent terrorism. But they don't want us to. They don't want any phones bugged, and they don't want random searches by computers. And what computers do is random searches. That's what computers do.
We'll get to how it should be done in just a second. I want to hear from Garland as to why suddenly people care when they didn't care 8 years ago, and nothing's really changed in 8 years.
Well, for the same reason they didn't care about the deficit Cheney said deficits don't matter, because their guy wasn't in. You know, this kind of reminds me, actually, in the big picture, this kind of reminds, or rather looking at it in a broad fashion, it reminds me of the Tea Party yelling, "We want our country back." And my position was, you never had it. It was owned by the robber barons. It was owned by the wealthy. You, working class and working poor people, are fooling yourself to think that you ever had your country in the first place to get back. And what I mean by that, the analogy of this, you ever heard of COINTELPRO?
Yeah, that dates back to the 50s, I think.
What was going on? They spied on Paul Robeson Jr.
Yep.
They spied on Martin Luther King. They spied on the Vietnam War protesters illegally. You name it. This is not new. Now, we're probably a little better off now, because they don't exactly, you know, slip LSD into our drinks like they used to. But
really? Because that was Terry's excuse.
Well, we do that ourselves, actually, now. You know, it's called genetically modified food.
Oh, okay. All right.
But at any rate, my point is this, is that it is convenient politically every so many years to blame the other guy, but it is what our country does. I'm with Terry. You know, I yawn with this because they screamed about it in the 50s, 60s, 70s. Well, the 50s, they didn't know about it. And 25 years from now, if climate change doesn't wipe us all out, which is all, in all likelihood it will, but if it doesn't, there's one person left. And there's another person who happens to be the government. That government person will spy on the other person. They'll look in their cave, you know, from under a rock or something, and throw a twig at them.
Yeah, oh. And you know, this is what computers are built to do. I mean, you know, if I go onto Google and ask, you know, for information about Mark Levine, it just searches all over the place and grabs 60 billion other Mark Levines who I'm not interested in. I'm only interested in you, Mark, of course.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And it'll give me all that tons of information, and then I have to, you know, modify my search a little bit. And it'll search all over the entire universe and limit it down to 12 Mark Levines, you know, and so on and so on. This is what computers do, and we live in a computer age, and this is what happens, and this is what government is going to do, period.
Well, let's talk about how it should be done, because in this world in which we live, progressive talk radio, we act radio, we are supposed to say how it should be done. So even though it may never happen this way, the Obama administration claims that, yeah, they gather all this data on everybody and we're all being monitored and they only know who we call and how long we call them. And so somewhere in one of the 500 quintillion, which, by the way, is a billion times a trillion, so a billion trillions, in the 500 billion trillion pages of information they have on all of us, they know that how many times I called my mother. And my mother, you know, if she ever wants proof of how many times I did or did not call her, could you know, that information can be used against me. You didn't call your mother on her birthday back in 1997. I don't remember. No, we have proof.
I hope your mother's not listening.
I do call my mother on her birthday. This is merely hypothetical, Mom. Merely hypothetical. That information is somewhere there. But apparently, according to the president, they don't actually look up that until the fact that I didn't call my mother on her birthday in 1997. Again, purely hypothetical. That becomes an issue with regard to a foreign agent, which could be any foreigner or anyone who is an American but is working for a foreign government. And then they go and they get a warrant and so forth. Here's my problem with this. It's not that if that were true, I would have a severe problem with it. It's that I don't believe them. I don't know the parameters. They haven't publicized them. If that's all they're doing, first of all, I think they need to tell us about it. This shouldn't be secret. I think Americans could say, all right, just spy on the foreigners. I mean, you know, we're citizens. We're safe. Spy on the other guys. Most, not the ACLU, but most Americans could probably accept that. But given that they take the data on all of us, and given that, as Terry points out, you look for one Mark Levine and you find 100 others, there's got to be a lot of excess looking at things. Garland.
But it's a search process.
All right.
Right now I have in front of me, and maybe it's in it, there's over 400 words that trigger the search that we know of. Over 400 words. And this is everything from, you know, a phrase like human to human to a phrase like hostage. And, it's just bit by bit by bit. So if you're standing there saying, hey, you know, I'm going to have human to human hostages that I'm going to use maritime domain awareness for threats to the SWAT teams seeking lockdowns in various bomb areas.
Okay, you lost me.
Tying all those words together in my conversation, the computer's going to go ka-ching.
Yeah.
And here's a guy we got to look at. You know, but it's just simply a process, the same as any other computer process, and there is no other way for the government, realistically, technologically, to do this search job. Yes, they should be open about it, but we've got to accept that there is no other way to do it.
What if Garland looks up this woman and says, she's hot, she's the bomb. Now he's got hot and bomb in the search engine. Garland,
right,
you're a terrorist.
Getting in trouble. Just
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that happened.
I guess not.
At any rate, I think that the other thing you have to understand is we think we're doing a search. Every time you do a search, you are actually searching yourself. When you search something on Google, the computers are looking for something relative that they can advertise to you. They're looking for you to fill out. If you fill out some document, then it's going to go to 20,000 different companies, and suddenly you'll be getting letters from everybody advertising something related to what you searched for. You know, what people think of the computer, people think of the internet as something that's going one way. It's coming back to you much more so than you are going out to it. It has become a means for
it's
advertising.
Big Brother.
Money making. Yes. Yeah,
they are watching us.
Right. And therefore, it only makes sense that the government would be doing this. I think these are great political footballs to kick around to attack us. But the bottom line, have you ever heard of the Palmer raids? I think it was back in 1990 when they illegally raided all of the union office and the communist and the socialist office. The government, if they perceive someone as an enemy or a possible enemy, they are always, laws be darned, they're going to do whatever they have to do or whatever they feel they need to do. And then maybe, generally, the difference is now, generally we don't find out till years later. But if anyone thinks that they're going to stop doing it, then they're just barking up the wrong tree. Why would they stop doing something? You remember the Alien and Sedition Act. They violated the Constitution time and again. Who thinks that the government is going to wake up one day and say, well, you know, we've been doing this for the last 200 years, but hey, you know what? We've seen the light. We're going to stop. I'm not that naive.
No, and the problem for us becomes we got to make sure that the legal system within this and beyond this, you know, is in place, because this is going to happen. So how do we deal with it when it happens if I wind up in court because of the things we just said on this radio show? That's where we have
to. Well, here's the other thing. You can't challenge it in court because, you see, it's a secret court. And the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court.
Some other related crime. I mean, you're not going to be arrested because you said 500 different words.
Right. But here's the thing. I can't challenge the government spying on me because by a 5-4 decision in the Supreme Court that happened a few years back, they said I can't prove the government is spying on me, so I can't challenge it. And by the way, if I can prove the government's spying on me, that means someone leaked top secret information, and if I help prove the government's spying on me, then I can go to jail for helping to leak top secret information. So I can't say the government's spying on me. I can't speculate about it. It's not true. You can't prove it. I prove it, well, now I go to jail for proving it.
Well, Mark, it goes a little further than that, because you can't do anything about it because you don't know. Under the Patriot Act, a government official can go to a judge and quote apply for a warrant to search Mark's home.
Right.
The judge can't say no. The judge can only review it and say, "Oh, okay, I reviewed it." They can then search your home, take your goods, take your computer, bug everything you have and leave, and they do not have to advise you of the so-called warrant that they had. So the bottom line is this: you can't do anything because you don't know. Right in Maryland, we had an instance where the ACLU found out that the Maryland State Police and I believe one of these intelligence centers were spying on anti-war people and environmentalists and pro-animal people and stuff like that. They had actually put their name into terrorist database. Somehow it came out. I think somebody from the inside ratted them out. The bottom line was, then after that, it came out. But the bottom line, Mark, you could, you know, at any given day, you could walk up to the airport and they could say, sorry, you're on a terrorist no-fly list, because you talked to Terry and I. You have no way of knowing it 99.9% of the time. You can't do anything.
You know, and one of the interesting things is sort of a side note here, and you guys are far too young to remember, but you know, even back in the 50s and the 60s with the continual development of technology, the introduction of computers, you know, the big, huge ones and everything else, and television, and even with the introduction of radio, people, science fiction writers were writing, this is exactly what's going to happen. It's going to be two ways. It's always going to be two ways. You're going to be getting stuff on your screen, your radio, your computer, but they're going to be getting stuff on you. So it's fascinating that this is obviously predictable technologically, sociologically, politically, and this is the age we live in, and we have to do what we can to protect the rest of the legal systems because they're listening.
Well, they are definitely listening, and I, you know, call me old-fashioned for actually thinking the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution still should be followed unless we amend it. I know that strict constitutionalists, I mean, people say, oh, that's a conservative thing. No, I'm a progressive. I'm a strict constitutionalist. I believe in the right to privacy. And the issue is very simple. If you know that there's some possible crime going on, go to a judge. They're very good about giving you these warrants for probable cause. There's a lot of legal spying going on. We can argue about the extent of legal spying, but I'm not even there yet. I'm just talking about warrantless wiretaps, warrantless looking at our person's papers and effects, which is clearly not allowed, if unreasonable, under the Fourth Amendment. And I would argue that spying on 350 million Americans, yeah, that's kind of the definition of unreasonable.
Well, Mark, I don't know if you've ever heard of Project Shamrock. It started like in the mid or late 40s. And its main purpose was to link the civil rights movement and anti-war protests to international communism. You know how long it went on? Until 1975.
And you know what they did? You know what they found? No links.
They intercepted all of the anyone who they suspected, any information that was going, whether it was telegrams, whether it was mail, whether it was phone calls, anything that went overseas, came back and forth overseas with no warrants. From the 40s till the mid 70s, and we look around today in horror and shock like something brand new is happening to us? I don't think so, Mark.
Well,
but the key is, as Mark has brought out, I mean, somehow we got to demand a lot more transparency. We've got to be able to know as citizens what the hell is going on and what's happening to the information they are gathering. We need to know that.
I would hope that's the basic minimum. All right, we got to take a quick break, gentlemen, and then we'll go to Garland next. Wants to talk about climate change, the destruction of the planet. We'll end on Terry's optimism, just because it's so extraordinary that we might have malfunctioning equipment. This is We Act Radio. This is the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine, Terry DeKester, and Garland D. Nixon. There's no D in.
There's no D. It's an R.
Garland R. Nixon. All right. We will be right back.
This D is silent.
202-889-9797. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine with, say hello, Garland Nixon.
Garland R. Nixon.
And the doctor of democracy himself.
Yes, Terry DeKester. Hello, Terry DeKester.
Hello, Terry DeKester. How are you, sir?
I am great, sir.
This is the Raucous Caucus, 202-889-9797, if you want to join in the raucousness and be a part of the Raucous Caucus. Garland, you want to talk about climate change, why it's all over, the oceans are rising, the Arctic Circle's melting, we're all doomed, right?
Okay, that's my segment. We can move on to Terry. No,
I'm just wondering, I mean, is there any hope here, or just, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm going to give you a scenario. The name's Garland R. Nixon, and the R is for climate change. I'm going to give you a scenario.
Yes.
Garland buys a new gigantic sailboat that costs $200,000.
I didn't know Garland.
Mark and Terry embark on a journey from the Chesapeake Bay to the Bahamas. Halfway through, the boat springs a leak. There's sharks all around. We're trying to figure out, we know we're done for if we don't do something. And Garland looks at Mark and Terry and says, you know, guys, we got to plug this leak. And you say, why? Because this boat costs $200,000. No, the reality is we've got to plug the leak. And you guys look at me and say, to heck with your boat. We're going to die and be eaten by sharks.
I say get Gilligan. And make him do it.
I can't imagine Mark and I agreeing on much of anything, let alone to die on your boat.
I imagine cannibalism starting very soon, but go ahead.
I'm going to give you two sentences and then tell you why we're doomed. Okay, Sentence one, ski resorts in the U.S. employ 160,000 people and generate revenues of more than $12 billion. Okay. Sentence two, the success of ski business operations depends greatly on climate, which is why we are so interested in programs that keep our slopes sustainable, Brent Giles of Park City Mountain Resort in Utah said. We welcome legislation and regulatory initiatives that will reduce carbon emissions and incentive renewal, blah, 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 blah. So now the ski industry says we're going to lose lots of money. We have to do something about climate change. The problem is this. We link money to everything. We are sitting here. The boat is sinking. The sharks are swimming around us. And we're not saying we got to do something to save mankind. We're saying we got to do something. Why? Because it's going to cost us a whole lot of money if we don't. We're done. We're done. We're doomed.
I think ski resorts are the least of it.
yes, but, you know, being here in Oregon, you know, you can ski on Mount Hood up to July, and if those glaciers start melting, by golly, you can't ski up till July. So, obviously, I mean, this is good that the ski resorts are complaining. I mean, I'm happy.
It's something.
Yeah.
But it reflects the problem, and that is, look, what happens when we talk about Medicare for All? What do we hear? We can't afford that. Now, people are dying. 40-some thousand people die every year with no medical insurance. But we talk about the problem is money. What happens when we talk about climate change? Well, you know, the energy companies are against it because they'll lose money, and this company is for it because we link things that are directly associated with our survival and the survival of the species with a theoretical measurement device called money. I say you're dooming yourself when you do that. I can't fathom how stupid human beings are, and the question has to be asked, do we deserve to survive?
Ah, there's the question. Is it time for mankind to become extinct?
This sounds like another Bob Marley song.
Oh, yes, and we can write it.
Yeah. But I mean, you know,
we're dying until the never mind, go on, guys.
But you know, this is the unfortunate truth. It's human nature, unfortunately, not just the money issue, which is part of it, and I certainly agree with that, Garland, and that's what distorts everything. But the other fact is we don't deal with any disaster until it hits us. Period. We just don't. I mean, you don't do anything about the levees in Louisiana, Mississippi, et cetera, until Katrina. You just don't. You don't even think about doing anything about gun control, which, of course, we never will, until Newtown, you know. We don't think about there's going to be an earthquake out here on the West Coast in probably in the next 50 years. It's going to make, you know, the one in Japan look like a play park, you know. I mean, it's going to be nothing compared to what's going to happen out here. Are they doing anything to prevent it? Are they doing anything to structure things and change things? Not really.
Well, why can't I get cheap beachfront property right now in Point Barrow, Alaska? I mean, I got to tell you, there's not much beach traffic yet in the Arctic Circle. But if you buy now, you can get a pristine sandy beach. Well, not pristine. There's a bunch of oil on it. But some beaches that used to be connected to ice, but now are soon going to be tropical. So,
and to show you about the money issue and pollution, one of the tragic things that's now happening in the United States, and it's happening right here on the beautiful Columbia River, is they're going to start shipping coal from the United States to China. We are the world's now biggest coal supplier. We're going to supply the whole damn world with coal. So, by golly, we can really smoke up the place.
So, you know, the funny thing is, the other day the president met with the head of China, and they talked about an agreement on climate change, and we constantly scream and yell that China is, you know, they're building all these new coal-fired power plants and blah, blah, blah. How ironic isn't it, Terry and Mark, that when it comes down to it, we scream and yell about that, but when they need coal, and we can make a few bucks off of it, well, you know, hey, just ship them the coal.
And let's not forget how we get the coal. We blow up mountains in the Appalachia that have lasted only, say, 4 billion years. Time to blow them up, throw a bunch of arsenic and cadmium and all kinds of dangerous chemicals into our rivers, which float down right by me in the Potomac River right there. Look, there it goes.
Mark and Terry, what does your body do when it is invaded by a virus, when it sees threat? It raises the temperature to eliminate the virus, doesn't it? So if we are kind of causing some problems on this Earth, and I was an organism called Earth, I'd probably maybe raise the temperature a few degrees because that's all it would take to wipe us out.
Gaia, the idea of Gaia or Gaia, however you want to pronounce it,
the goddess,
Earth is a living thing.
Right.
You know, whether you want to say it's sentient, it's a whole other question, but it's a living thing, and it, all evidence points towards that. It is adapting. It is changing. It is going to protect itself.
Well, to be fair to Gaia, to be fair to Mother Earth, we have had these temperatures before. They have gone and they have drilled ice cones, I guess, deep down into the ice in Antarctica, and found out that a mere 800,000 years ago, we were at this same temperature. Now, there was no humanity then. We didn't have much beachfront property then because there was no humanity, and the dinosaurs really didn't get into skyscrapers as much as we do. So probably climate change 800,000 years ago was less likely to affect human habitation. But there are whole countries. I think Vanuatu is one of them, a South Pacific nation made of atolls, which, you know, are fairly low to the ground, that's going to cease to exist. And well, and then of course any country that has significant land that's close to the ocean.
Well, you got to add in this, Mark, when you talk about historical context in a on a long term basis. There have also been a number of extinction level events that have knocked out well over 90% of the living creatures on this Earth. So every now and then the Earth did apply a little bit of disinfectant to its surface. It kind of washed itself off a little bit every now and then.
You know,
but I just think that what we're doing is we are even more so. We have made ourselves more dependent on a habitat, a very, very narrow gap of environmental factors that could take us out. We have, you know, we have to be warm now. We don't have much fur. We live closely together. We interact with domestic animals.
Some people have a lot of fur. I've seen them. It spills out of their shirts. I've seen people with fur. I'm just saying.
I don't think we want to go
there. Yes, I thought Terry, he looked like he was losing some of his fur on the top there, buddy.
All right. Maybe so.
Trust me, at my age, I have no fur. It's all gone. You know, but I mean, we're not going to recognize this problem, guys, until something really major happens. It's unfortunate. Maybe we're actually trying to commit suicide, you know, as a species. But I'll tell you when it'll be recognized and when it'll be dealt with. When the water rises, which it's going to do in Miami.
Yeah.
As soon as Miami starts to go underwater, then it'll be too late. But then everybody will scream, oh, we got to do something.
Yeah, we don't care much about New Orleans, but Miami we care about. Is that what you're saying? I was thinking maybe Malibu. I thought maybe Malibu.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll see on the cover of Forbes magazine, Florida goes away. You know, low-lying parts of the United States to disappear into the ocean. How can you make money investing on this?
I think the Hamptons, maybe. That might be the point where the Koch brothers have beachfront property. So there is this global protocol, which sounds so boring that people fall asleep just when you say the words. But the infamous Kyoto Accords out of Japan that are supposed to lower climate emissions. And, I think everybody's cheating, notably we are probably the worst. But there are some wind factory, you know, there are some windmills coming out. There is some solar energy. It's, you know, vastly underfunded. And of course, Republicans seem to think that, oil and coal is our future.
Well, Mark, if I may go back to my little story about the three of us being on a boat with water coming.
Yes, please.
In.
Yes, you left us in the middle there. How are we going to end this story before the sharks come?
Water is rushing in. The sharks are circling, just waiting for their meals. And we look overboard, and I look at Terry and say, Terry, what are we going to do? How about using this gigantic pump? And Terry says, no, I've got a thimble. Why don't we each take our thimbles and we can dip the water out of the bills with the thimbles, and in a mere 4 to 5,000 years we'll be finished and the boat will be empty and we'll be fine. That is what I hear when I hear people say, well, you know, we'll do a few windmills. We got some treaty, a treaty of all things. We wrote something on paper, a treaty. Boy, you know what? That's going to save us. We got a treaty, so we might as well go back to what we're doing. Oh, we need a couple treaties. We don't need to actually do anything. We need to have a couple treaties, put it across the front page, show it on MSNBC, show the president signing a treaty, and then we can all go home and we'll be fine.
although I don't want to be the optimist all through the show, you know, but there are countries that are doing things. I mean, Europe is doing a lot more than we are. There are some South American countries that are doing more than we are. You know, there are people that are making changes. There are even industries and companies that are making changes.
Yes, but it's a worldwide problem. And if you've seen or eaten Chinese air recently, you can see that that billion people or so, I mean, that literally people, you can get, it's worse than lung, it's worse than smoking two packs a day just to breathe the air of Beijing. So this is a global problem. And, you know, thank you, Sweden, for being so good here. But unless we, and we're the worst, United States, but China, I don't know. China's worse than we are, but they have more people than we are. We're the worst per capita.
I actually bumped my head on some Chinese air. I still have the bruise.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. That would explain why you looked the way you did last time I saw you, Garland. Yeah. So I get that.
And, you know, I want Garland to know, too, as he spread the word, that I do have a permit to carry a symbol.
Great, because I think that the water is gushing in like a waterfall, but I'm glad you got that symbol.
You better watch it. You better get a permit to carry that symbol or you'll be arrested. Now, if you want a Bushmaster with a 100-round clip, you can walk through the streets and carry it anywhere you want to. But darn it, if you get caught with that symbol, you're going to jail.
Well, that's the answer. We have the answer now. All we do is use our semi-automatic assault weapons to shoot at clouds, and we'll get rid of this weather problem.
Oh, you solved it.
Yeah, okay, all right. Problem solved. We can move on to the next one then, which is Terry DeKester apparently remarking that the Obamacare is actually helping America's health. You wouldn't notice it. I don't really see it on too many front pages. But yes, Terry DeKester, the optimist. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, folks. After this break, we're going to hear Terry DeKester actually talk about good news and praise the Obama administration. You won't want to miss this because it doesn't happen very often. We'll be right back with more of the Raucous Caucus right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. The United States government is spying on us and collecting all of our telephone calls. Our climate is heading toward destruction as the great waves, tsunami will envelop us all and we will all die soon. And Terry DeKester is an optimist. I don't know how that happens, but this is Mark Levine. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus with Garland Nixon and Terry DeKester. Terry DeKester, what do you have to be optimistic about?
Well, I got to start with a little bit of gloom.
Okay. That's normal. That I expect.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't lost my gloom knowledge completely. You know, I just want you to know that. I take the gloom pill.
All right.
I mean, first off, just real quickly, some things you guys are aware of, some things I'm sure you're not. You all know about the shootings in Santa Monica. It's fascinating that the shootings in Santa Monica really aren't getting much of a play in the news anywhere. Back here, it's on page 2 in a small little story, because they only killed 4 people. You know, it's insignificant.
Yeah.
You know, it's nothing.
It's a little bit of a fender bender.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the good news is that we are going to arm every bus driver, we're going to arm every librarian, you know, and we're just going to keep on arming everybody until we all shoot each other, and then we don't have to worry about climate change. So that's one thing. The other thing, you know, that really struck me, some stuff you guys may or may not heard of, in Arizona, a lot of the governor is actually trying to expand Medicaid.
Okay.
And, they're getting death threats. And
death threats for expanding Medicaid.
Yeah, because they want to expand coverage for Medicaid and Medicaid access. So they're getting, you know, the right wing is working hard. They're now threatening the bully classes out there, and it's got its brown shirts who, you know, are all of these militias. And just to give you an idea, in case you didn't know this, guys, in the year 2000, the United States of America only had 602 hate groups. Well, now we have 1,007.
It's nice to know we have a growth industry.
Yeah, we do. And we used to have the peak of Patriot and militia groups, and militia groups, interestingly, don't understand that other part of the Second Amendment is about, you know, well-regulated militia groups.
Right.
But Patriot and militia, we had, the peak was back in the 1995 with Clinton, but it got down to, in the year 2000, we only had a couple hundred Patriot militia groups. Now we have 1,400 Patriot and militia groups, and 44% of Republicans, 44% believe that an armed revolution might be necessary in the next few years.
Next few years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Terrific. That's special.
Yeah, and
based on the way they're acting, they're going to create one.
All right, all right.
Yeah, well, exactly.
So Terry, you know, you promised us a little bit of optimism, and you're not doing such a good job right now. I'm just
saying. One more little story.
All right, all right. Yeah. Finish your gloom.
Compared to what Terry Terry normally says, Mark, you could actually.
you may have a point there. All right.
You may have seen this, you may not. Do you guys know who are the highest paid state public officials? What category of officials are the highest paid across the United States almost universally?
Sports people?
Oh, you're good.
Coaches. Yes.
Every state in the union except one or two, the highest paid public official is a football coach or a basketball coach.
Well, because that's where our tax money should go.
Yeah.
Because gosh knows we're not paying the players anything. They have to do all the work. But the people yelling at the players, they need millions of dollars of our tax money, because if they don't, the season's victory may go down. I don't know. Will it?
Yeah. But the players get paid, too. I mean, they really do. They get paid in so many ways you and I can't even imagine.
Well, they get college scholarships and then under-the-table payments and things.
It's incredible. It's corrupt.
All right, let's get to that optimism. We only got 15 minutes left.
Okay, the country's out of whack, right?
Right.
Republicans are attacking everything. Obamacare is going to be doomed. They're going to destroy it and everything else wrong. I had the privilege yesterday, in the midst of my gloomology, to attend a conference for chaplains. Turns out that the bishop leading this conference is on the board of one of the major medical groups here in Oregon. And he was giving a report, as were some other people that were involved in major hospitals in the area, of what is actually happening in the hospitals. And their overall report is that, yes, hospitals now are worried. Yes, hospitals are complaining. We hear about that. They're complaining about they don't make enough money, and we're complaining they charge too much. The general feeling in the industry seems to be that we are in a trough right now as we adjust to Obamacare, that people are insecure in what they're going to do, and hospitals are trying to solve the problems. But that things are going to stabilize in the next couple of years. They're not really worried. And the main thing that is happening is we are shifting slowly but surely towards a public health care system. And this, the hospital, these are private hospitals. These are for-profit hospitals. They are accepting this and adjusting to this. And one of the ways that they are adjusting is far more involvement by community organizations, for-profit and not-for-profit, that are taking over services that hospitals used to provide, particularly aftercare services. And the general feeling amongst the board members and the administrators of hospitals is that we are in actually a pretty good situation, that it is going to stabilize, it is going to be a period of transition and some confusion, but it is going to work out quite well for the benefit of the patients, and the hospitals will do okay as well. They are not pessimistic. And this surprised the living heck out of me. They really think that, one, the community is getting a lot more involved, the community is providing a lot more services, be it the town, be it the county, be it some private organizations, be it nursing homes, be it homes that take in people for, you know, three or four people that you can do legally in most states and care for them. The whole picture is really quite positive, which blew me away.
I do know that the recent studies show that healthcare costs have risen at their smallest pace in something like 20 or 30 years. It was like only 1.7% when we've been seeing 5, 10, 15% increases on an annual basis. And they largely think that because the Obamacare provides for competition and exchanges, that is keeping the cost down. Now,
And they are adjusting. They are adjusting every way administratively. And, there's going to be problems, to be sure, and there's idiot states like Texas, you know, that, you know, refuse a couple $1 billion to help their people, federal government, but there are also states, you know, like Oregon, again, that has supposedly the model for the Obamacare system, which is going into effect very soon, and, you know, it's very positive, and the involvement in community is the essential point that I think is really quite positive. The private industry is obviously providing a lot fewer services. They're not going to give good wages. They're not going to give benefits. The community is, in fact, adjusting.
Well, let me get Garland in here. Garland, what say you? Are you as optimistic as Terry here?
Well, there was an article
not long ago that said, you know, there's a big shock with, as Obamacare starts, and the shock is that it's working and that it's doing very well and it's projected to work. You know, the way I see it, our medical care system, or the lack thereof, was in such bad straits. It was so horrible and so unavailable to working poor and poor people. And many people, and what we had was so ragged that we had nowhere to go but up, and that even the what may seem like the most minor changes in, you know, eliminating the lifetime limit on funds and things like that would have very significant changes. So I think that my opinion is that Obamacare, when we look back after 5 or 6 years, we'll realize that this was a major turning point in our medical care system, and that I've said all along, the Republicans have staunchly opposed Obamacare, not because they believe that it won't work, but because they believe that it will work, and they know that that will push America closer to some form of universal health.
Okay, but not so fast, because the Republicans have not yet rolled over. Yes, they've tried 37 times to repeal all or a part of Obamacare and failed. They're not going to succeed there. But they are succeeding, Republican governors, in preventing aid to the poor, which, of course, was the main point of Obamacare, to make sure that every American has access to health care. And the main way that those that earn under a certain amount of money have access is through Medicaid. And right now, for 3 years, the federal government is saying to states, you know what? We'll provide every penny. You, it won't cost you a cent. We will help every poor person in your state. And then after 3 years, if you decide to keep with the program, which you can change it if you want to, we're going to pay 90%. So you get a 90% discount, which seems pretty good to me. But forget 3 years from now. Right now, it's 100%, and yet it looks like it's going to be maybe 20, maybe 25 states, probably mostly in the South, but not exclusively in the South. Wherever there's a Republican governor, they're going to say, you know what? Screw our poor people. We want them to be sick because then they'll be upset, I guess, that Obamacare isn't working. I'm not sure. What is the goal? The Republican governors say the goal is, well, we know that 3 years from now, we're going to have to pay 10% of this program, and it's way too much to pay one-tenth of the cost of a poor person's health care. That's their argument. But, Terry, do you buy that, or is the whole point that they want the poor people to starve and be sick in their country, I mean, in their state? What's going on here?
It's sort of like what Garland was talking before about, you know, climate change. Basically, human beings are lemmings, you know, and they don't really want to admit that, but that's really what they are. And the current fad in the current chaos is to say, you know, everything is about jobs, everything's about the economy, and I, as an elected official or whomever the governor or senator or representative is speaking, you know, I'm here for one reason, which is to cut taxes and to make sure that, you know, we don't take any more of your money, not adding the fact it's because nobody's going to pay you any money. But we're not going to take any of your money, and I'm going to cut taxes, and I'm going to provide jobs. And no matter what I do, that's what's going to happen. It's all I can't say that on the air.
No, you certainly can't.
I didn't say that.
You did not say that.
Garland said that.
Okay. Garland, you shouldn't say that.
No, don't say that.
Well, I think the fact of the matter is
Let me finish.
Finish your point.
Yeah. Okay.
We are caught in this mantra, and we're going to be caught in that mantra for a while, and there's nut jobs out there, and particularly Republicans, who are trying to take apart the whole system. The real point of what I'm trying to make is we hear about the political news all the time. We hear about the economic news all the time. We don't hear about the organizations that are smaller, quieter, and across the country that are working in very, very positive directions. That's my real point here. You know, I am not on the inside of what's happening in this hospital corporation, but I heard people talking yesterday that are on the inside, and they are making all kinds of changes and adjustments that they're in favor of that are going to provide good services, better services, at less cost, because it is going to work. And there's an undercurrent of activity here being done outside of the main media. The media isn't paying any attention to this. That is really quite positive. They are solving the problems. They are not ignoring the problems. So I guess the real message that I'm trying to give is, one, there are a lot of good things happen. Get involved yourself, and don't believe that getting involved just means getting involved politically. get involved in the companies and the services that are in your community because they are, in fact, doing things.
I'll tell you something else the government is doing, which I really appreciate, because, frankly, it surprised me to see such good government functioning. I know that's something that you really can't hear very much on the radio or TV anywhere. So Stephen Brill wrote this masterful article in Time Magazine, which I still highly, highly recommend. It took up the whole issue of Time Magazine. You can get it online. You may have to pay $2.50 or something for it. I don't know. But it was, at the time I read it, it was free. And it was, I think it was a very long article. It took the entire Time Magazine. Time Magazine's never done that before, like 30 pages. Every word, though, you won't be able to put it down. Talking about different cases all across America about the cost of health care, how one hospital might charge $3,000 for a procedure and the next hospital will charge $115,000 for the exact same procedure. You know, if you want to buy $100 aspirin per pill, go to your local hospital. And talking about how their prices have absolutely nothing to do with cost or profit, or, well, it has to do with massive profit. They charge ridiculous prices, and then, you know, basically, they'll charge you $100 for a pill of aspirin, and then they'll say, but we're going to give your insurance company a discount and only charge them $10 for that you know, pill. And even though, of course, you can get a whole bottle of aspirin for, you know, $5. So
this is the good news?
Well, no. The good news is that after Stephen Brill's article came out, somebody in the government read it, and somebody in the government, I think it's Health and Human Services, is now checking hospital prices all across the nation and publishing them so that we have a record, so that you know, for example, that in Arkansas, it costs $3,000 for, in the same operation in Modesto, California, it costs $115,000. So the government is at least finally monitoring what hospitals want to keep secret, which is their prices. And that alone, that kind of information, transparency is the best disinfectant. That alone, I think, is helping to lower prices.
Well, sure. And they're also going to be rating hospitals. They're already beginning to rate hospitals. And they're going to rate hospitals on standards that are public and everything else, so you literally will know which hospital provides the better services. You know. But, I mean, the real point is, you know, we always hear the cries, you know, you got to be vigilant, you got to be vigilant. So most Americans, that means you go out and buy 35 guns and 5 million rounds of ammunition.
Right.
If you really want to be vigilant, get involved in your community and the stuff that's going on. Forget on what's happening on the national level. You're not in that game to begin with. Yes, you've got to be attentive to it and fight it and all that, but get involved on your local community level because things are happening and you have influence there. And it makes a difference. And I saw this yesterday. I saw it, and it works. Thus the optimist.
Thus the optimist. Garland.
Well, you know, I'm with you guys on that, and I feel good about the direction that we're moving. There's at least one thing I feel good about. But, you know, it's going to be fairly interesting to watch how this thing plays out. Particularly, what I think is going to be interesting to watch is going to be how things play out in the state, between the states that accept the Medicaid expansion and the states that reject it over the course of, say, 5 years. You know, ironically, paradoxically, I think that it's going to be, in a twisted way, very valuable thing, a great benefit, because there will be a stark contrast. America will see, oh my gosh, if you're in Massachusetts, if you're in Maryland, if you're in, you know, wherever that accepts it.
Blue states.
Some of the red states that accept the Medicaid expansion, and right across the border, the ones that don't, the contrast will be so clear that I think it will be easier to make the argument.
Here's one of the things
every
I like.
Magazine, you know, every news organization puts out, you know, the 5 best cities to live in, the 5 best cities to retire in, and everywhere else. Well, if one of those, if you're living in Texas and you haven't got $1 million, there ain't a city in Texas you're going to want to retire in or live in as you get older, or if you have any medical problems whatsoever. You're going to leave Texas as fast as you can to get to a state like Oregon, like Vermont, et cetera, et cetera. One other good news thing that I forgot to mention, you know, Vermont just passed laws making possession of marijuana, small amounts, absolutely legal.
Good.
That's 17 states that have now done that.
Good.
That's going to decrease arrest. That's going to decrease incarceration. There are things that are happening, guys.
Here's one of the things I like, just based on what Garland said. I've pointed out in this station many times before how the blue states subsidize the red states. The red states, the ones that are complaining about the government, for every dollar they give the government, they get $2 back. And for every dollar the blue states give the government, they get 67 cents back. Well, interestingly, with the red states rejecting federal aid for health care for the poor, rejecting Medicaid, while the blue states are accepting it, that actually rights the balance a bit and means that the blue estates will be able to keep more of their money, and good for them. And you know, maybe the answer is that people need to just leave the red states because they don't have good government. Come to the blue states, and that'll increase our electoral votes and our seats in Congress. So, and then we'll just leave the red states to, well, anarchy, which is what they want anyway.
Yeah, let Texas have all the anarchy, keep it in the borders of Texas, and let just the Texans, you know, just tear each other apart if that's really what they want to do.
But we do need to airlift Austin, just like Berlin. We need to have an airlift for Austin.
That's right.
Yes.
All right. All right. Thank you, gentlemen, for the Raucous Caucus. We are here every Sunday at We Act Radio at 12 noon, and you can never want to miss our particular brand of raucousness. You can find this show at marklevinetalk.com if you missed any point of it. Terry, if they want to reach you, I guess they just read your NSA file?
Yeah, they could do that, or they can go to Dr. Hope. You know, but the old one still works too, Dr. Democracy.
Dr. Hope, DRHOPE at...
No, still Dr. of Democracy.
Oh, okay. DR of Democracy at...
AOL.com.
At AOL.com.
The Dr. Hope yet.
All right. You will soon be Dr. I think that name's probably taken, but we'll find out. And Garland.
They can just email me, garlandn@gmail.com, Twitter at @GarlandNixon, or Facebook, GarlandNixon.
Yes, you can also Facebook me, find me there, join the fan page, Mark Levine. My Twitter account is at @MarkLevineTalk. Please check us all out, and don't forget to come back next Sunday for another edition of the Raucous Caucus at 12 noon. Thank you, gentlemen. This is Mark Levine. Coming up next is the Inside Scoop. We're going to explore in detail the legal ramifications of the surveillance programs and exactly what they're doing, what they should be doing, what's legal to be doing. You won't want to miss that. Coming up right after this.
Thanks, Mark.